Okay, good morning. It's been a while since I've seen you guys. I hope that you found the Shen's talks useful and his support for NS3. Yes? No? Maybe? Okay, good. The last time I was here, we were talking about wireless local area networks, and I think pretty much the theme for that was medium access control and the concept of having it distributed among the various end users, which led to a contention-based access system. Cellular networks are sort of the opposite end of the spectrum. Everything gets controlled. Okay, we already looked at how cellular networks provided sort of overall coverage. Now we're going to look at some of the details about sort of how they provide sort of services connectivity for users. Okay. The context we're going to look at this in is the European cellular evolution, and that takes us from GSM, a 2G system, up to the current 4G systems, LTE, LTE Advanced. Okay, and we'll sort of give a quick overview of that evolution. So each generation builds on the generation previous, so we can sort of take GSM as our baseline and then have a look at how the future systems evolved from that point. Okay, so we'll give a few more details about GSM than we did, and then again, sort of more incremental discussions from then on. And so, again, we're going to sort of take GSM as our baseline and just mention a few characteristics of the GSM architecture and basically, sort of how is the network set up to provide resources to our users, and in particular, the goal of GSM is going to be making voice connections, so end-to-end voice connections. Okay. And so we'll look at sort of the basic components of a GSM system, and then the control protocols associated with it, and the channel structure, which is how the messages gets transmitted throughout the system. Okay, and then again, we'll look at how that evolved through the various generations. We'll start with just looking at what are the basic characteristics of each of these generations. And so, first generation cellular networks are designed to deliver analog voice traffic, okay, which was, again, just a wireless replacement, wireless mobile replacement of the existing telephone network of the time. And so one of the first systems was the AMPS cellular system, and that was deployed first in 1978 and standardized a few years later. Okay. And this being sort of a new thing to do, there was no sort of global agreement as to how to do it. And indeed, I think at the time, probably people didn't even see the need for any sort of unified approach to doing it. So pretty much regions or countries were developing their own versions of these analog cellular systems. Okay, so we have lots of them. And they won't interact or operate with each other. Okay. So, as a proof of concept, these were great, but the disparity of standards meant that your market was limited to a certain region, and things would then not interoperate. Okay. The analog signaling meant that there was a sort of relatively small capacity to the systems as well. But, you know, it proved to be something quite useful, and you did get upwards of 20 million subscribers by 1990. Okay. So the second generation of cellular networks is going to be characterized by the move from an analog signal to a digital signal. Okay, so to transmitting bits. This is still your primarily your voice coded, your coded voice signal, but it is, you know, again transmitted as bits, not an analog. Okay. There was a recognition that people would want data services as well, and you know, since we're sending bits, you know, those bits can be other things besides voice signals. Okay. And the move from analog to digital is going to allow us to improve on our quality and capacity. Okay. The end goal is still voice oriented and circuit switched, so the goal is to make, you know, again, a fixed allocation connection end to end. Okay. So, we have now both time division multiplexes and the first appearance of code division multiple access. Okay. And so, probably the main, is that we still have a lot of different standards, which are not in any way going to be interoperable with each other. The main ones of interest are probably GSM, which was European-based, standardized by ETSI, and then CDMA1, which was used in the Americas and other regions all around the world. Again, the main interest in CDMA1 is a historical one. It is the first that proposed the use of code division multiple access or spread spectrum techniques in any big way. But GSM is the standard that he's sort of de facto one. It dominates the 2G market, I should say. There's, to this day, billions of users. That usage is declining as later generations come on stream. So, particularly, if you see in Ireland in the last 3-4 years, you've moved from 2G to pretty much 4G systems. Okay. So it still has a broad usage. I've asked cellular guys, and they say that it's here for at least the medium term. And it's also, again, when we look at this sort of evolutionary process, it's sort of the basis, it's the starting point for the evolution into current 4G systems. So based on that, we're going to look at more details, and I've been slimming this down yearly, but there's still a lot of details. But it's a nice place to start and get an idea of how cellular systems are implemented. So the evolutionary push, again, is towards more capacity, higher data rates per user. Okay. And so the idea behind 3G was to improve our data rates. Again, we're talking, roughly the turn of the century, so around 2000. So applications and data usage was well entrenched at that point, or becoming better entrenched at that point. And there was also a push to some extent standardize the usage. It didn't quite work, but we're coming closer. 3G puts packet switching and circuit switching now on an equal footing, so you have both voice and data traffic catered to. Still as separate entities, but again, both catered for. So it offered the users higher data rates and required, therefore, higher spectrum efficiency. The evolution towards 3G came in two phases. There were bridging standards built on top of the existing 2G systems, and the distinguishing feature of these systems was that they tried to make relatively minor changes to 2G systems, and they operated in the same spectrum as the 2G systems. So these are frequently referred to as 2.5G. And so, again, as an evolution of GSM, you got GPRS, General Packet Radio Services, which, again, make relatively minor changes to the GSM standard to improve data rates, and do get pushing towards the 3G data rates, and also the North American CDMA standard was improved as well. Okay, so again, as an evolutionary, as a sort of minor and incremental change. Okay. So the 3G standardization, the requirements were handled now by the, not ETSI, but the International Telecommunications Union, so a global standard was arrived at. Although again, if you have multiple implementations, still have interoperability issues. And the 3G standard, was referred to as the IMT 2000, International Mobile Telecommunications 2000, and towards 2000. And it's, again, wrote down the criteria for any implementation of these 3G systems in terms of, look at the goals and the data rates, etc. Okay. So IMT 2000 is the requirements that the standards must satisfy, and we still ended up coming with a couple of implementations or standards within that. The main ones would be UMTS, and again that was evolutionary from GSM. And was proposed by 3GCP, and then CDMA 2000, evolutionary from CDMA 1, and was proposed by 3GPP 2. Okay. And UMTS allowed for a number of physical modulation techniques, but the main one the main one we used was also a CDMA standard at this point. So the 3G systems primarily use CDMA techniques, but at least with the UMTS, you saw the proposal of the use of RPM and MIMO. So 4G systems are, to some extent, bigger, better, higher data rates, handling of heterogeneous networks. So this includes the local area, WiMAX, and legacy cellular networks, so 3G and 2G networks. So you can use whatever's most efficient at the time. Roaming is fully supported. Quality of service is specified. We're going to talk about that today, maybe tomorrow or maybe next week. And an IP-based system. So now packets are sort of the big, or the center of the system. Okay. So again, ITU defines the requirements in the IMT Advanced standard. And we finally see an agreement about how that's to be implemented in the LTE Advanced standard put forward by 3GPP. Historically, 3GPP2 did some work continuing on with a CDMA-based system, and eventually agreed that actually the OFDM and MIMO systems were more useful, and wrote behind this now unified standard. Evolutions of WiMAX are also certified as meeting the 4G requirements, but again, I don't think they're overly widely used. Okay. Again, the improvements, the data rates, and quality of service are mainly dependent on the advances of radio interface technology. So we use bigger and better versions of OFDM and MIMO, strong error correction, and then allocations that are based on negotiations with the user. So you're able to aggregate channels and things like that. So that's sort of how things sort of globally advanced. What we're going to have at least a high-level look at is how we move from 2G to 4G, in particular from GSM to UMTS to LTE, LTE Advanced. Okay. So again, like telephony systems, cellular systems are infrastructure intensive. Again, if you think about when we talked about the local area networks, we had users. They could communicate with each other, or there was a single access point. Here, you have loads of access points, and then you have a whole mechanism behind the access points, whole infrastructure behind the access points, handling your connectivity. Okay. So we're going to look, the main topic for today, going through from 2G to 4G, is going to be how the resources are controlled and allocated within the cellular system, and we're going to say it's the physical infrastructure, so a lot of equipment and different components, and then the ultimate goal from the user's point of view really is to make a connection into the system and through the system, and there's obviously a lot of detail in that first link from the user to the base station. And so, and then controlling all that, there has to be a lot of signaling going on. Okay, so you have a lot of control messages being sent between various components of your system in order to make things happen at the right time and make sure that the resources are allocated as needed. Okay. So we're going to start with looking at 2G systems, specifically GSM. And again, the goal of GSM is voice connectivity, so it's a circuit switch system, so you're going to try and create a connection from the end user through the network to another user. We're going to look at the basic architecture, so how do we get from our access point, our base station, back through the network, and what sort of equipment do we need to manage all that. Then we'll look at the control protocols associated with that, and finally sort of how we identify the types of messages or find the types of messages that are required. And then again, we'll look at the evolution of that basic system onwards into more modern systems. Okay. So, GSM provides mobile digital voice telephony, and also supports data transport, but it does that by allocating voice connections then to data. Okay. So, similar to having a modem for your landline. It's the dominant standard worldwide, but as you saw, not the only one. It's seriously complex. And there are upwards of 6,000 pages of standards and many, many textbooks written on the subject of GSM networks and the various aspects. So what I'm going to give you in the next 20 slides or so is just a very, very general overview. Okay. So anytime you enter into the telephony world, you get acronyms everywhere. And this is no exception. That's getting a little bit of it. We'll try to keep it to the basic ones. Okay. So we have our user, and again, they just physically need access to the system, so they're going to have a physical wireless radio connection to the base transmitter stations. And then, of course, we need to go from this single access point back through the network and be able to make a full connection either to a telephone or a data network. Okay. So the first step in that would be a base station controller. So you have a number of BTSs aggregated and controlled by a single base station controller. And that's mainly concerned again with maintaining coverage, etc. Okay. That will then go back into the switching subsystem. So switching subsystem is going to be responsible for trying to make those full connections. And that will again coordinate between the end users and as forward and back through the BSC, and then again out to another network through a gateway. There are various databases that have been hold the information that is needed to sort of make that happen. And then we have a message exchange system and mobile services node, which was designed to manage intelligent network functions, so call forwarding, etc. Okay, and then there's an operations and maintenance center, which performs systems maintenance and that sort of offline tasks like billing. Okay, so if you think about it, this gives you sort of regions of management. So you start out with cells, and a cell is the area covered by BTS. application areas, and these are associated with a single MSC. And finally, there will be a number of MSCs to cover the whole range of the network. Each component is obviously performing now different tasks and sort of appropriate messaging and interface structures have to be defined between each then of the components. So ultimately, we're going to spend most of our time again talking about this slide here. Comes the mobile station inwards. Okay. So again, the base station subsystem is responsible for connecting our end user back into the network that's represented by the mobile switching center. And we have two components then. We have the controller, and then we have the transceiver, the multiple transceivers. Okay, so obviously the transceivers are mainly responsible for that physical connection, so it provides the radio interface. And then the controller is going to be responsible for, again, moving the message back to the MSC, and then managing radio aspects over multiple BSCs. So it will indicate sort of the cell configuration or frequencies, the cells used, the power levels within the different cells, and handover between different cells. So it faces in two directions, out towards the transceivers and then back towards the switching center. The MSC then, and so again, most of the radio aspects are within this subsystem. The MSC then is going to be responsible for connecting the calls, for making the circuits end to end. And so it's manages those calls, so makes connections. It is involved in sort of handover as you go from one MSC to the next MSC. It will encrypt a piece of data, and it will manage, again, the forwarding of the data back to the external networks. At a global level, it can reassign channels and redistribute network resources. Okay. And so it needs to maintain user information, both in a dynamic way and in a static way, and so there are a number of databases associated, attached to the MSC, which sort of maintain the information we need to know about the user. Okay. So the first of these, the home location register stores the permanent data about the users. What services they're entitled to, what authentication parameters are connected with them, etc. And then it also holds a small piece of information about the current location of the user. Okay. And it does that at the level of the current MSC that the user is associated with. Okay. And that's in the form of an attached visitor location register. And this VLR will hold information about the current users, so the users that are currently active and attached to the network and within the range of the within the control of the MSC. So if you need to find a user, then there are information stored in the VLR and the location of the VLR is stored in the HLR. You also have authentication data in the authentication center, which allows us to verify identity, and an equipment identification register, which holds information about equipment, so if it's stolen or not authorized, then you can prevent block calls. Okay, and sometimes the equipment identification register and the authentication center are combined. So as I mentioned before, we also have a message center, so providing messaging services, and a mobile services node, which handles intelligent network services for the mobile. We also have two gateways, which again interface with our public network, so our gateway network and our public network. Okay, and so again, from a technical point of view and from our point of view of thinking about how connectivity is achieved, those the switching subsets system and the base station controller or the base station subsystem are the two main entities. We also have this third operation maintenance center, which monitors, performs monitoring, management in case of failure, manages the home location registers, and again performs sort of less real-time operations such as billing. Okay. So again, just to take a short look about how things move through the network, though. Then, if we're trying to access the network, we maintain that access sort of as long as the phone is sort of switched on and has again performed authentication. Okay, so this allows for incoming calls. So the connection to the network allows for incoming calls. Okay. So, in order to achieve access, we need to ensure that our user is authorized to use the network. And maintain information then about the user. So this is achieved through the use of a SIM card in the user equipment, and the SIM card stores the information and identifies the user to the network. And then the home location register stores information related again to that user ID. For the use of the network, and so this is somewhat static information about the user, and also again the location of the device as in terms of the address of the visitor location register. Okay. So when a phone is powered on, first thing it has to do is find the network. So it looks for the closest BTS. And so it's going to be able to find that because the BTS will be sending out a beacon signal, which the phone can listen. When the phone finds the BTS, it can signal the BTS of its intent to, or its desire to connect with the network. And the BTS then forwards that information back through the network, and an entry is created in the visitor location register. Which then communicates back to the home location register, which will then again store the current location of the phone. So again, once the phone is in the network, we have information about the location of the phone up to the level of the MSC or the visitor location register. So if somebody tries to call the phone, well, that will come in through the GMSC. And the GMSC will determine the current location of the receiving phone in terms of the PLR. So that should be, I believe, the MSC. It'll go from the GMSC to the MSC, which will determine the current location of the phone. Try again. Okay, it goes to the GMSC, which finds the current location of the phone in terms of the MSC or PLR. And the HLR will also determine whether the phone is active or not. If it's not, it will perform whatever actions required, either call forwarding or sort of busy or sort of not available. If a VLR is available, then a temporary number is allocated, and that temporary number allows for routing to the visiting MSC, so to the MSC whose region the phone is in. And then the MSC uses the temporary number to find the phone's record, and which will include the
associate with it. So,
as we saw before, paging will be used to locate the user within locate region of the BSC. Okay. When the appropriate ETS is found, then the call connection is forwarded and the attempt is made for the final connection, and if the user answers, then a path is created from the user through the visiting MSC back to the gateway, back to and back through our end user. Okay, so if you're making a call again, then we have to signal through the ETS, which will then connect you to the MSC. The MSC will make sure you're authorized and then attempt to forward the call through the GMSC. And create the connection that way, and then when the call is answered, it'll create the voice link. Okay, so that's somewhat similar to what we saw earlier when we were talking just about coverage. And again, you see the idea of having to create a link from the user over the radio to the base station and then back into the cellular system, which is then again connecting you further to the public networks. We've added a few more details and a few more actors into that list. Okay. So, we've talked about making requests, starting connections. All of this is going to require messaging. And so, using that messaging to set up or to do resource allocation, so ultimately to make the end-to-end resources available for your call. Okay. So, again, if you contrast it with local area networks, there was no real resource allocation. You just contended for the resources as best you could. Here, everything is controlled through the network with the goal of providing that resource allocation. Okay, or some fixed bandwidth. Okay. So there's a lot of control messaging going on. So you have to ask for these resources. The base stations have to be told who to allocate resources to, etc. Okay. So, if we consider our radio link, then we have a basic channel structure over which these messages, or indeed the data, our user data, can be transmitted, and So we have physically sort of a basic unit of data transmission, and what we'll see is that that corresponds to a frequency allocation, so carrier frequency plus bandwidth, and then a time slot. And then through this basic unit, we're going to send either control messages or data. So within the cellular world, or indeed the telephony world, just in terms of terminology, control or signaling data is referred to as a control plane, and user data is referred to as a data plane. Okay, so if you ever see those terms, that's what it means. And we're sending these over again, the same physical channels. So our control signaling, our control protocols, sort of have a number of synth tasks, and those protocols are arranged in a layered architecture in order to accomplish those tasks. So communication management refers to the end-to-end connectivity and setting up that end-to-end connection. Mobility management obviously is managing the user as they move from one region to another. And sort of at the lowest level, we have radio resource management. So again, allocating the radio resources within the system and managing that. Okay. So, connection management and mobility management are end-to-end, or sort of are user-to-MSC functions. Radio resource management really has to happen between the mobile station and the base station. Exactly what's done is obviously going to depend on how things are done, so it depends on what your connection is, so between the mobile station and the BTS, you've got the radio link that you're managing. That radio resource allocation has to translate it into a wired packet-based or a wired allocation at some point, so between the BTS and the BTSC, and moving forward. Again, the basic link between mobile station and base station is a time slot, and then that is translated into bits later on. Okay, so working our way up through the layers now, our radio resource management is managing the that says the radio and fixed channels between the mobile unit and the MSC, and probably the trickiest bit of that again is managing the radio link. Okay. So it's going to determine channel assignments. It's going to be involved in handovers, so if you're moving from one base station to another, or even through MSCs. I thought I had that GSM uses Gaussian phase shift keying, but it also does slow frequency hopping. So, in order to improve an individual user's signal, they actually change the channel on which you're transmitting sort of periodically. Manages things like power, synchronization, etc. So again, all the things to do with allocating and maintaining that radio link are part of the radio resource management. And then translating that link back through the system to the MSC. Okay, so handover is one of the more complicated issues for radio resource management, and so again, it has to be handled so that calls continue as you cross cell boundaries or regional boundaries, and it's significant because a lot of signaling has to happen, and the operation has to be achieved quickly. Okay. And so, in order to do it, we measure performance metrics on the uplink and downlink, so the MS is actively participating. Process. Okay. Handover can occur at different levels. So within the cell, users will still be changing channels, so the slow frequency happens. Then the users will move from cell to cell. If they're still in the range of the same BSC, then it's the BSC who will manage that move. They can move from one BSC to another, in which case, if the same MSC is handling those, then the MSC will. Or they can move from the ring of one MSC to the range of another MSC, in which case these two MSCs have to cooperate to arrange that move. Okay, so mobility management. Tracks the user as they move through the network and also does sort of authentication. Tasks. And so mobility management is responsible for attaching initially attaching the user to the networks, managing the data in the various databases, updating the information with mobility, so then you're going to travel from one MSC coverage to the next, in which case you need to update what the current DLR is. and tracking again all of that information, so it updates VLRs and HLRs. So we've already said that paging is done at the level of RBSC. Okay. And so again, the MS has the VLR attached to it, and within the VLR, and so the HLR knows the location of that VLR, and then the VLR tracks which BSC the user is attached to, and then there are multiple cells within there, and it uses paging to find exactly which cell the user is in. Okay. So this is sort of compromising doing that, so it's having to look everywhere, which can sort of again would precipitate a lot of signaling and a lot of wasted effort versus sort of pinning down to a specific cell, which would require a lot of updates. So the level of update is MSC. So, mobility management also performs authentication and security. So, when you log in, it's the one that, again, checks that you are who you say you are, and then uses encryption of data to protect the data. So finally, we have communication management. So that's, again, now managing our calls, so managing our end-to-end connectivity. Okay, so making calls, receiving calls, possibly changing transmission modes, although it seems like you'd have to be moving from one network to another, and if there's an interruption, reestablishing the calls. So that, the end-to-end connection is managed by the MSC. Okay. So, if you are interested in the details, I'm certainly never asked any questions about it, but if you go to the link through the links here, it actually traces you through the protocols and the protocol messaging that's sent to do things like a handover or set up a call. And so it's interesting enough to look at. Okay, I think I'll call the break now, and when we get back, we have one last fairly fiddly detail to look at for GSM, and that's the channel structures. And so again, what I said is that physically, GSM divides the channels up by time slot and frequency allocation, and so We're sin again, then all messages are sins. Through these basic allocations, and what we'll do is have a little look at how we distinguish then between control messages and data messages, and what type of control messages, etc. So we'll handle that when we return from our, say, 15-minute break.